But you have me at a loss. You know my name, but who are you?
Just another American who saw too many movies as a child. Another orphan of a bankrupt culture who thinks he's John Wayne, Rambo.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Hi, I'm Joe.
And I'm Tiana.
And this is Next Door Villain,
a podcast where we uncover the villains to discover their humanity.
Frohe Weihnachten und schöne Feiertage. And welcome to a very merry German holiday.
Was that German? What did you say? I don't speak German. What did you say?
I'm really excited because I get to use my very limited German knowledge that I learned in high school. I mean, I forgot almost everything. And I just said, Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays.
It sounded beautiful. And of course, you are speaking Danke. German because our villain today is of German heritage. Is that correct?
Yep. That is correct. He is from East Germany, which doesn't really exist, but because the wall came down, you know. So
when he grew up in Germany, there was an East Germany.
It was East Germany. So yeah, Hans Gruber.
From the movie Die Hard.
Mm-hmm. Die Hard, which he did. Die pretty hard.
Hans Gruber. You mean?
Yeah, Hans Gruber died very hard. He hit the pavement quite hard. Sorry, that maybe I shouldn't joke about that.
Yeah, that
rest in peace. Maybe, I don't know.
Granted, he pretty ruthlessly murdered a lot of people and intended True. To blow up a crowd of people, a crowd of innocent people on a rooftop.
Yeah.
So not a good dude.
No, not a good dude.
So anyways, Die Hard. The 1988 film, I believe, starring Bruce Willis and Alan Rickman. Pretty cool cast. Both of them have had pretty great careers, but at the time the movie came out, they were both fairly early on and not super well known or super known as great actors. But we know now that they both had awesome careers afterwards.
Yeah, rest in peace, Alan Rickman.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, Alan Rickman. Not Hans, but Alan Rickman, rest in peace.
Yeah.
There is a quote that I can share. Can I share a quote?
Yes, go for it.
You're like, oh God. You
don't need my permission.
She's sabotaging. She's holding my podcast episode hostage.
No, say your quote.
Okay. This is by Hans Gruber. As far as I'm concerned, I'm not playing the villain. I'm just playing somebody who wants certain things in life, has made certain choices, and goes after them. Hans Gruber.
Mm. That's a great quote. I don't think I caught that when I watched the film. But to be fair, I had a really hard time paying attention to this film because it's so boring.
What?
I don't know. I watched the film. I actually watched it for the first time a couple days ago. And I've tried to watch it before. I've never been able to get through it. In fact, last Christmas I tried to watch it, but I was drinking a little bit too much and fell asleep in the middle of it. I know that everyone loves this film, but I just don't get it. What is it, Tiana?
I think the arms race between Hans and Bruce Willis's character, John McClane, is very fascinating. They're trying to be one step ahead of one another.
Yeah.
And there's so many tricks that they keep doing on each other. Like, for example, Hans pretending that he's one of the hostages because he knows that John McClane hasn't seen Hans, even though he's talked to him over the walkie-talkie. Or Bruce Willis, John McClane. I don't know how to refer to him. Bruce Willis, you know, holding detonators and just kind of like cracking jokes. You know, it's like a competition between both of them that keeps going on. And it's very fascinating. And they're very smart in how they do this arms race.
Here's why I don't like it. And this is personal, so like I'm not attacking anybody who likes this film. I know that people think of it as kind of like the quintessential action movie. And so I can appreciate that perspective, but I'm like, this movie's kind of quote unquote copaganda, right? That like this cop who just happened to be in the right place at the right time goes out on his own, using his own muscle and killing people along the way. He's not like one of those heroes who like has this high moral standard or whatever. And that he by himself manages to save the day when all these other people weren't able to do it, just through his brute strength and force of will, he was able to defeat, frankly, a super genius villain.
It is. It definitely has some cheesiness to it, but I guess I cut it some slack because it's an 80s film. Yeah. And I think they were a little more into that, I think, from what I can tell in the 80s.
Yeah.
We weren't alive then, but we'll just assume that I think they were a little bit more into like the kind of cheesy, like hero saves the day and macho men, which
yeah.
I will talk more about the macho men thing later.
So I keep wanting to get pulled into these discussions, and I think we should. But before we dive too deep in, we have to do that thing that we do every episode where we, for whatever reason, try to explain the entirety of the character in 30 seconds with no preparation. You know that thing? We do it every episode.
No, I don't.
All right, so what we do is...
You didn't fall for that? Darn.
No, Tiana knows what we're doing. And if you're listening, you know by now that you can go on to Spotify and vote for who you think did a better job. There are no stakes involved, but it's kind of fun for us to see who you like more. You can just use it as a popularity contest. You can just vote for who you like the most, which I probably shouldn't say that because I think you're the more beloved host of this podcast.
I don't know. I think we do got some ladies slipping into the Insta DMs sometimes. Really? No.
You got to share those with me.
Oh, Joe. Where's Joe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Hey, sometimes people ask about you. I will say that sometimes in the Instagram DMs, people in general might sometimes like ask about you a little bit because I think they can tell that I'm a little more active on it. They're a little like, oh, what did Joe do? Or what did Joe like get on his villain quiz? Or is Joe okay? Like I've gotten those questions before. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I'm sure he's fine.
I mean, you should let me know. I would boost my self-esteem. To know people are asking about me.
Yeah, I just enjoy talking with them myself. Yeah, yeah. I'll let you know next time.
You just want all the fans.
Right.
For you.
For me.
All right, let's do this thing.
I'll take a spin.
All right. 3, 2, 1, go.
All right, so Hans Gruber is from East Germany, and he really wants to get money from the Nakatomi building in California. So he has this whole team of people come in and shoot some people and try and get into this vault so that he can steal bearer bonds. But of course, John McClane tries to take him down and he eventually falls to his death by falling from the building. And his last words were, yippee-ki-yay.
Nice. You did a good job.
I tried. All right. 3, 2, 1, go.
Hans Gruber is a very intelligent man who is trying to steal a bunch of money from this rich, powerful corporation. And the way he does it is really clever, is that he's got this really elaborate plan to make himself look like a terrorist organization so that the FBI will have to get involved and they'll cut power to the building, which is something that he's not able to do himself, but he needs to have done in order to break into a secret vault and get all the money.
Awesome. Yeah, that's really important to mention that he masked his motive. Genius, by the way.
Yeah. I lost track of time there and I wanted to describe it much more in much more detail. But yeah, I think I got the basics of it. I will say after all the talking I did earlier about how much I could care less about this film, when I finally watched it through, I did find at least Hans Gruber to be a interesting and compelling character.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas I could have cared less about Bruce Willis.
Right. Yeah, I'd say Hans really stole the show. He is also known as like one of the most interesting villains like in pop culture, and he lands on those lists and stuff.
What was interesting when I started like doing some research and thinking about him more is they don't give us really much backstory for him. He doesn't really seem to have a strong motive. Like, we don't really know why he wants all this money. So he just seems like kind of like cool, collected. It's almost like I feel like maybe he's not so much motivated by the money. He just like maybe wants to impress himself on what he's able to do.
I still think that the money is number one and in the forefront for him, but showing people that he can win through class and smarts and intelligence as like a side goal, which he almost did.
Yeah, he would have. Yeah. He if John McClane hadn't been there, I believe this plan would have worked flawlessly.
And I think that's what really makes the movie interesting too, is like you don't know exactly what the plan is. Maybe let's talk about the plan just so that we understand how intelligent he is. You know, as a disclaimer, we say this all the time, but like I don't agree with holding people hostage and stealing a bunch of money and, you know, killing people. So he's still a bad dude.
Yeah, we can still respect the tactical intelligence required to do such a thing while still condemning those things as bad actions.
Right.
We can respect the intelligence and wish that he had used that in a more productive, healthy way.
Yeah. Right? He has so much potential to do something else.
Yeah.
Anywho.
The plan.
I do have it here for reference. Oh, so first, he wants to get hostages in one place. That was pretty easy.
And not just coincidence. It was a holiday party happening on the 30th floor of the building. So he did know that everyone was going to be in the same spot. Like they wouldn't be spread out throughout the building and all their different offices.
And then he wanted to tell police that his motive is to get his fellow comrades out of jail because he used to be a part of like a very nationalistic group, very ethnocentric, really bad group. So he was part of a pretty bad group. We find out later that he was expelled from that group.
For being too violent.
Which is saying something.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Whew, Hans. Hans will be hard to relate to. But anywho, so he wants to tell police that his motive is to get his fellow comrades out of jail so that they don't understand that his real motive is to get the money. And then when they don't know that his motive is to get the money, then they'll shut down the power, which then allows him to get into the vault with all those bearer bonds. And he wants things to kind of escalate as much as possible so that the police come.
He needed them to think he was a terrorist, because being a terrorist is what would get the FBI involved. And the FBI protocol was to shut power to the building. And he needed that power shut off in order to get past the electromagnetic lock.
Yes. And then once the FBI come and quote unquote give him his comrades with the hostages on the roof, he is going to blow up the roof so that they think Hans is dead. If they think you're dead, then they don't think you went anywhere.
That was the one question I had throughout the whole film. I was like, all right, now they know who you are. Like, you're going to have millions and millions of dollars. What are you going to do with it? Like, you're going to have to be in hiding the rest of your life. But then, yeah, he reveals that the plan is that they're going to think he's dead. So then he can have a new life as someone else with all his money.
Killing the hostages, I guess, ensures that there's no one alive who witnessed his true motive. The last thing is then they run off in an ambulance, which is a pretty good disguise of a car. And then I think they go to an island or something. And I didn't really know what bearer bonds were.
I still don't know. So you
I still don't fully understand them, but you know, it's kind of like money in the form of paper. What I know, money is usually paper, but like
money is made up by the government.
There is a Wikipedia page, and it said that whoever physically holds, like, the bearer bonds is the presumptive owner of it. So it was really smart for him to steal bearer bonds, because it's not like something is written on there that it belongs to a particular person who's different from Hans. It's like, you have that money paper, and you can use it however you want, because you have it. Long story short, he was also very smart to target a building that had bearer bonds. He even figured out that detail.
Yeah. I kind of respected the fact that, so he had this big elaborate plan. And, you know, the stereotype with villains is that they love to tell everybody their plan and, you know, I guess get off on the recognition of their brilliance. He didn't do that. He, like, constantly was playing his cards close to the chest, even with the people he was working closely with. And I think it was important that not too many people knew the overarching plan in order for them to play their part in it. And he knew that. And so he revealed information as he needed to at the right moments to the right people in order to accomplish what needed to be done.
Even when he had a plan, it was really incredible how he could just think on his feet at the same time, too, if something went awry. Like when Hans was going upstairs, Bruce Willis comes around and Hans is like, oh, I just realized he doesn't know what I look like. So he pretended that he was a hostage who had gotten away.
Which was good thinking, good calm, collected thinking. It didn't work, though.
Right. Yeah, it didn't work. John McClane is also, you know, kind of smart in some ways, too.
Yeah, I think John was thrown off at first. I think at first he believed it and then kind of quickly sort of realized the absurdity of that happening. I don't think he knew it was Hans. But I think he knew it was not somebody that he wanted to trust.
Hans's accent game was a little off. Like he pretended he was like Southern or so, like a Southern American or something.
Yeah, but not well.
Not well. And so you got to watch those YouTube videos on accents. Oh, I guess he didn't have those, but.
Southern Alan Rickman.
Right.
But this is actually, I think, one of the ways that I was able to empathize and really kind of connect with Hans. Because I think I'm very similar to him in this respect, that in intense situations, I'm really good at keeping a level head. Whereas like other people in intensely emotional situations, a lot of times like might freak out. And you might think, I mean, I talk about being really anxious a lot on the podcast, which I am. But for whatever reason, in a disaster situation, I'm very like cool, calm, collected, level headed. And so I saw a little bit of myself in Hans when he was going through these situations and things were going wrong and he was able to just kind of stay focused, put out little fires along the way, but know that things were going to work out. And for me, through therapy, I've kind of learned that response, my ability to be like cool-headed in intensely difficult situations is probably something I learned over time as a way to like protect myself from intense, difficult situation. So I have to wonder if he maybe went through something when he was younger or at some point in his life that was difficult that he had to develop these protective measures, which they can be a hindrance in some ways, but in certain areas like this particular situation, it's a huge benefit to have that skill.
It's okay if you don't, but do you have an example of like an emergency situation that you had to deal with that where that was helpful?
Yeah. I shouldn't laugh. But so a number of years ago, I managed an apartment complex and one of my tenants, basically she got shot by her partner.
Oh my goodness.
And this happened in like the middle of the night and she had to like jump out the window to escape. And there was like blood all over the side of the building And I don't know exactly what happened, but there was like blood inside of the building. I saw a news story about it the next morning. And then I drove to the office to like try to figure out what was going on. And it was just this very intense situation. People were like freaking out. There was blood all over the side of the building. And everyone involved was like super emotional about it. But I felt like I was able to be like, okay, here's what we need to do. Like, we need to get this cleaned up. Like, need to get a hold of the police and figure out the details of what happened and just kind of like start taking steps to like move forward and help everyone get through it.
Yeah, that would be a really hard situation to deal with. And I feel like if I would have been in that situation, I probably would have been in a state of shock a bit where like the first step might not be as apparent to me.
Yeah.
That's really hard. And I'm truly sorry for the person who had to go through that.
Yeah.
I have an example like that too, but it's not as intense as yours. Just once I worked at a hotel and the power went out for like the entire night.
Oh no.
But I was able to handle it pretty well. It was mostly like trying to handle other people's emotions.
Yeah, that's what it is a lot of times.
And it like got so chaotic with people like yelling about like, why isn't the lights on yet? Why can't I swim in the pool in the dark? And I think I did a fairly okay job at just telling people things pretty logically and carrying a flashlight wherever I go and checking on things to make sure something wasn't leaking. You know, I guess it's good to manifest Hans, but not in an evil way.
Minus the murder.
Right. Yeah, he's probably the smartest villain we've covered, I think. So far, at least.
Yeah, for sure. Which is what makes it so frustrating that John McClane defeats him. I hate to root for Hans, but just this guy, he's like just going to muscle his way through, beat people up, like just through sheer force. He's going to take down someone who is clearly much more intelligent than him. In every way, Hans should have won this exchange.
Yeah, when we talk about fairness, yeah. But at the end of the day, I'm still glad that John won because we're talking 30 people dead if he hadn't.
Yes, that's I got to keep that in mind.
You're too stoic. No, I'm just kidding.
That's a little bit of what makes Hans so successful is that he doesn't concern himself with casualties, for example. He has his mission, and he said, these are the things I need to do to accomplish that, and I'm not going to make any considerations that for anything that might potentially stop my plan, which is, in like we've said it so many times now, is terrible in this case because it involves murder, but could be a respectable trait in somebody planning to accomplish something good via non-violence.
Right. Hans is hard to empathize with. And in fact, I think he's one of the villains that I just have a hard time doing that with because of the murder aspect, right? But I feel like there are a lot of things that I can learn from him, just like how you were saying that you can learn about the ability to be analytical in times of stress. The first thing is that the way, this is kind of small, the way that Hans counts to three would be super effective if you're a parent, I think. So like he gets like the CEO of the company or the founder in the office asking him for the code for the vault. And he truly doesn't know. Hans is like, I'm going to count to three. There will not be a four. And the silence and the intensity of that is just moi. Because I'm thinking about, you know, the child aspect, right? So my brain is becoming mother-like as time goes on because, you know. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, I like jotted that down. I'm like, that's pretty effective. I'll just like, there will not be a four, like to my three-year-old child, which I will do someday in the future. The other thing that I can learn from him is that he understands that sometimes things need to go to shit for them to potentially work out. He understood that having the situation inflate to the police / FBI arriving was necessary due to their willingness to shut off the power in the plaza. Mm. And sometimes you have to let things get seemingly bad in order to accomplish your goal. So like even in real life, as an example, like if you're trying to fix a relationship, for example, you might need to talk out all of the bad stuff and things might have to get messy depending on the situation. Like you might need to talk about the hurt, the pain. You might cry. You might yell. I hope you don't yell. You know, there's a lot of emotions. It'll look really bad, but you sometimes need to bring that up to the surface, hopefully in a pretty healthy way, but it still will look bad on the surface for things to then get better.
So that's very insightful. And I think something that really we all can learn. When you said that, I immediately started thinking about kind of like politics.
Yeah.
And how seemingly short-sighted politics are right now. Like anytime the government tries to do something, they're always thinking about the short-term benefits. Or like when you think about taxes and social programs, in order to pass them, sometimes they take more money or they take more taxes, for example, up front. So they have maybe a more immediate kind of negative impact. But the idea is that in the long term, they'll eventually be better for everybody. And you have to have that foresight to be like, okay, I know things might get worse for a little bit,
yeah,
but we're working towards a greater goal. I think that we forget that oftentimes because we're so interested in making sure things always go good. So I think that's a really good point and something that we can respect about Hans and his plan. And we should try to apply to more things in our life.
Yeah, it's kind of like you're cooking something in boiling water and it like boils, like, and it almost explodes and water is spraying everywhere. And it's like, and then it suddenly, once it's done, once it's cooked, it simmers down. And then your goal is completed, which is to cook whatever was in that boiling pot.
Yeah, I guess so.
That was my attempt at an analogy on the fly. Let me know if it worked or not. One last thing that I had. Mm-hmm. So we know that Hans's main motive is the money, and he masks it as terrorism and whatnot. But you can still tell that he has like some hatred toward American culture.
Mm-hmm.
I do appreciate his critiques a bit. He says, but you have me at a loss. You know my name, but who are you? Just another American who saw too many movies as a child? Another orphan of a bankrupt culture who thinks he's John Wayne, Rambo, Marshall Dillon?
That's exactly my feelings about the whole movie. Like, that's exactly what I was thinking the whole time.
Yeah.
About, like, who is this cop who just like thinks he can save the day,
yeah,
all by himself with a gun in his fists,
right? And Hans critiques this, and I appreciate his critique of like Hollywood doesn't do this as much as they used to in the 80s. They probably did this more, but I appreciate the critique of Hollywood constantly like pushing the macho man narrative. They kind of like state through pop culture that like real men are macho men. And I think Hans knows that to be a competent human, there is more to it than being macho. Like, macho men run into things without thought, without concentration, without class. And Hans knows class. And to him, you know, he's like, macho men are BS. I think men should be whatever they feel comfortable being, as long as it's not hurtful right to themselves or others. But countering the narrative that Hollywood likes to push, that all real men must be macho, countering that narrative is a good idea because you can be a man, but you don't have to be a macho man.
Yeah. There does seem to be, I don't know where I get this from, like some of the things that Hans said, but I don't have any like specifics to it, but he does seem to have some kind of like higher understanding,
yeah,
of like society and culture, which is kind of why I was a little bit baffled at like why he cares about this money so much, because you get the sense that he might be like a far left, like social anarchist type in his political views. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure if it's fair to like credit him with that necessarily. Because he also seems like a little bit of a fancy pants.
Like, he's like a little pretentious sometimes. But
yeah, like he wears the really high end suits and he like knew all the suit brands of everyone else.
He's like some of the guys in some of my political science classes in college. Like, I think this because I'm smart.
It's an enigma. Yeah. Like,
yeah,
like, you know, there's something in, like, I want a backstory film on Hans, like an origin story, because, you know, yeah, like he went through some interesting stuff to get to where he's at today. And we only get little hints at what his worldview might actually be.
Mm.
And they're intriguing. Maybe that's why this film endures, because it's just like, at its face, this is like a brutal action movie. But then there's like these little hidden nuggets of hints at other things going on that you kind of get to play with in your mind without ever actually knowing.
What if Hans is so smart that entire persona is faked? What if that's not even really his personality?
Yeah, okay, that is fair. I think there is some evidence actually for it. The whole thing about get his demands of all these prisoners being set free and then being like, oh, I just read about these ones in Time. Maybe that whole thing was just about making himself look like a terrorist rather than someone who's just trying to make some extra money. That's possible.
And he prides himself on being a very, very good thief. I remember that.
Yeah. That's why I like was kind of like, is money his real motivation, or is he mm-hmm. just like to know that he can accomplish this when no one else thought it was possible?
I think it's a combination of both. He had kind of this animal-like drool from him when he saw the money. So I thought, it's probably a little bit genuine.
It would also be smart for him to have a like particular persona, because if the plan succeeds and now he has a bunch of money and gets to go live another life, it would be helpful if he seemed a lot different than he did while he was robbing this corporation.
And once he goes to an island with all that money, he'll probably revert back to his normal personality.
Here's the thing.
I don't know. It's just a fan theory, really.
I don't think he would be happy on an island. Like, I don't think he would be happy just like relaxing and enjoying being wealthy. I think he craves the challenge of a challenge that he's not been able to get maybe anywhere else in life. And he gets it from creating and executing this elaborate plan.
It's a hefty plan.
And I realize that I've been kind of like flowering him with compliments this entire episode. So to reiterate again, he's a violent, dangerous man with no regard for the lives of others. And I do not like that. But he does, I think what we've talked about most of this episode is he has some character traits that we can pull out and apply in our own lives in a non-violent, healthy way.
Yeah, I can learn something else from him too, which is actually related to a flaw of his. You know how like villains are really prideful, and we see this every time, and it usually fails them? Like they're almost too prideful, and then that usually results in their demise. At the climax of the whole film, when he has a gun on John McClane's wife-ish, ex-wife.
I think they are married, and they're not technically separated yet, but on their way to it, probably.
Something like that. Hans has a gun to her, and then his henchman is right next to him. The henchman wants to kill John McClane right in front of them, but then Hans says, no, he's mine. And that is where so many villains fail, where they want to be the one to defeat their adversary. No one else. They're too prideful for that. They want to be the ones to do it. And that is where it all went downhill. Because if the henchman just have shot John McClane, he would have won.
That's a very good point.
But then because he stalled and they wanted to talk and they said yippee-ki-yay, and then John McClane got a chance to laugh, then he was able to shoot Hans when Hans pulled his gun away from John McClane's wife.
Don't get like hung up on your stupid pride when you're trying to accomplish something. Is the lesson, right?
Right. Otherwise, you might fall. Probably wouldn't have as intense of a demise as Hans, but...
Oh, God, I hope not.
you get the picture. You're smart.
Yeah.
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 I appreciate Hans' sarcasm. One of my favorite parts is when that, like, jackass who snorts cocaine businessman thinks he can negotiate.
Yeah, Ellis, I think, yeah.
Comes into the office like, I heard you might need my help, and I saw that you were the head guy here. And then Hans is like, you're very perceptive. Wow, really need your help.
A much needed light moment, light-ish moment in the film.
Right, it did end with Ellis's demise.
We kind of didn't care about Ellis, right? So this was another thing that turned me off, is the movie starts out with Ellis like sexually harassing John McClane's wife.
Yeah, he was kind of gross.
Yeah. He didn't deserve to die, but
right.
I didn't care about him.
Another random comment I had is "Mach schnell." It just means quickly.
Yeah.
They were like, "Get the detonator. Mach schnell."
I don't know any German. Except Das Boot.
I know why you know that. Because usually you order Das Boot at a German restaurant.
I've had a number of boots of beer in my life when I was younger. And now beer makes me feel really bad. Anyways, do you have anything else to say before we move on? Because I've kind of retired all my thoughts on this film.
Hans looks nice.
Yep. All right, well, I sort of wrote a poem for this episode.
Yay.
Kind of at the last second. And I did want, it's one of those poems where you take like the page of a book and you cross out a bunch of words to kind of make a poem out of the page using random words throughout it. Does that make sense? Yeah. I mean, yeah, Tiana is kind of known as the poet on this podcast, and I kind of try sometimes. But if you are someone who is interested in poetry, this is kind of a fun way to get into it, because you don't have to necessarily come up with all of the language yourself. You kind of find it within a page that's already written, and you have to cut out the things that you're not interested in sharing. So this is a short poem I created using that method from the perspective of Hans Gruber. As I was putting this together, I was imagining what he maybe was thinking as he was falling to his death. All right, so here it is. Unrepented sin or tedious duty. I know I want something. I think I'm beginning to understand frustration. Thought after thought, action after action, I keep on. I remember so many roads, but now there's an impassable cul-de-sac. What was my subject? That's it.
Boom. When you were reciting that, I was picturing the scene of him falling.
That was a nice scene too. Like, he did a really good job with like his expression as he was falling, because he was so like calm, cool, mm-hmm. confident throughout the whole film. And in that very last moment, you really saw him break down as he was falling to his death. And I think for the first time, really submitting to the fact that he had lost, and
yeah,
and to this Rambo dude.
Right. To Rambo.
With no shoes on. Another smart thing that Hans did when John McClane was hiding, he knew that John didn't have shoes on, and he was like, shoot all the glass.
Yeah.
So that John would have to cut his feet up.
He gets the award for the most detail-oriented villain too. He should put that on its resume. Very detail oriented when I am shooting people.
You should do a sexy Hans Gruber cosplay.
I don't know how I would do that with like a floppy blonde wig on my head. I have a Nerf gun I could use. I don't have that nice silver handheld thing he had.
All right. Well, I guess that's it for this episode. We managed to talk for so long about the movie Die Hard without ever once questioning whether or not it's a Christmas film, because I think that is a stupid debate. It's a Christmas film if you want. If not, don't watch it around Christmas, whatever. I don't care. It doesn't matter.
I guess there are other things in life to contemplate.
Anyways, you can, if you enjoyed this episode, you can go on Apple Podcasts and give us a review. We really appreciate those. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, at the Gmail. All of those are at Next Door Villain. And we do have merchandise now. We got some cool little designs that you can buy on t-shirts or stickers or mugs or magnets or all sorts of different things. You can find a link for that in the show notes to this episode, or at our website, there's also a button that says merch. You can click that.
Merch. Yeah, thank you so much for listening. Und auf Wiedersehen.